case, which is White v. Stanley. Mr. Carpenter?
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. Reasonableness is the touchstone of the Fourth Amendment, the Supreme Court has long held. My name is Paul Carpenter. I represent the defendants Tammy Stanley and Thomas Morrison in this Section 1983 civil rights case. It's a Fourth Amendment unlawful arrest case. This case comes before the Court on appeal from a denial of qualified immunity by the District Court in our motion for summary judgment. There were two issues that I think that the Court should address based on the District Court's finding. First, the District Court found that we had waived our argument regarding qualified immunity because we did not sufficiently address it in our motion and the supporting memorandum.
For what it's worth, I don't think you waived it, but I think you've got issues on the merits. So,
thank you. Both parties, I believe, are in agreement that we didn't waive it. We addressed it and the plaintiff responded to it.
The problem I have with your qualified immunity argument is that it is very common for drug users, drug dealers, and so on. If the police show up at the door, they try to flush the stuff down the toilet, right? And that's regarded as an exigent circumstance, justifying the police and barging in and trying to intercept it. Isn't this the same kind of case? I mean, granted, it's a minor drug offense, but it is an offense. And she's going to finish smoking it. If they have to go and get a warrant, she'll finish smoking it and then, you know, throw the ashes into the toilet. And that's it. So
I would agree with that, Your Honor. The officers came to the door. When the door opened, they smelled burning cannabis, and so they observed the commission of a crime. The very nature of that crime is it includes destruction of evidence, and so once they smelled that, they observe a crime including destruction of evidence, which I believe gives them exigency.
What are the penalties for possession of a small quantity of marijuana in Illinois?
There's user levels are misdemeanors, the lowest being Class C misdemeanor, which is a maximum of 30 days in jail.
In essence, one joint is the lowest class of crime, right?
I would suspect so.
So given that, and given that Welsh against Wisconsin tells us that in exigent circumstances, you have to take into account to some degree how serious the crime is, a little hard for me to see how these are exigent circumstances that justify a warrantless entry.
I understand your point, Your Honor. I think there's two issues. First of all, in Welsh versus Wisconsin, the offense at issue was more of an ordinance violation. I don't think it was a jailable offense. It was a driving under the influence, but at the time it was just an ordinance violation, non-jailable. The second issue, I think, on that point is that it makes it difficult for the officers at the door to determine whether or not it's a Class C misdemeanor, a Class A misdemeanor, or even
Well, they have no clue, but the... Well, go ahead.
They don't have a clue, and I guess they know that there's a crime being committed, and that's what they know. It makes it difficult to be reasonable to... makes it difficult for it to be reasonable for them to try to ascertain what degree of crime is being committed.
Well, the only indication they have is that there might be a joint burning, right? That's all they know.
Burning cannabis.
As opposed to a fire of a whole brick worth of, which seems unlikely. Could you address the case of Johnson versus United States, which seems to me to have held unconstitutional more than 50 years ago, a pretty similar entry? The police smelled burning opium. They knocked, announced their presence, and then went in.
I think that I understand. Kind of a side note, but since then, I think that the courts have looked at this differently, and For instance, in Kentucky versus King, it didn't specifically address whether there were similar facts. The police came, there was burning marijuana, they also heard footsteps, I believe. The Supreme Court assumed for the sake of argument that there was exigent circumstances. And I would suggest that if it was so unreasonable for that to be exigent circumstances, that the police officers should have known it was unreasonable, then the Supreme Court wouldn't have assumed for the sake of argument in Kentucky versus King that it was. Now, I understand that that went back, and the Kentucky Supreme Court assumed the same thing. It went back and determined it wasn't, but...
Let me ask. I apologize, but I didn't confuse you with your opponent in my first question. I have an apt question. What kind of training would these officers receive in terms of legal limitations on entry into a home? Do we have any idea? Because, you know, Judge Hamilton mentioned this old case. So,
I don't know.
Is any effort made to keep these people up to speed?
They take continuing education every year. They go through the Police Training Institute prior to becoming officers, and they do get continuing.
So we just don't know the nature of training that officers would receive.
Do we have any evidence in the record about why Deputy Stanley thought she had authority to enter? Has she testified about that?
She...
Does this go back to the registration thing, which clearly did not support...
Correct, Your Honor. I think from her perspective, she probably did think it did, but she... I don't believe it did, but she did smell cannabis, burning cannabis.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Prorock?
May it please the Court, Counsel. I'm Charles Prorock. I represent Mr. James White, the plaintiff in this case. It's our position that the District Court was correct in denying the motion for summary judgment with respect to qualified immunity. We believe that exigent circumstances did not exist to allow the officers to enter the home. The question was asked about Deputy Stanley's authority
to enter. I don't really understand that, because all she knows when she's standing at the door is that someone is smoking marijuana. And as Mr. Carpenter pointed out, that or perhaps Judge Hamilton, that could be... That could depend what level of crime it was. Could depend on does she have a huge cache of marijuana cigarettes? Does she have one of these giant marijuana plants in her room? It is at least a misdemeanor, but it could be, I don't suppose it would be a felony, but it could be something serious. And if she waits and gets a warrant, a search warrant, arrest warrant, the evidence will have disappeared.
That would be true.
What kind of judgment can you reasonably expect a police officer to make?
Well, in this particular case, they knocked on the door was open, and there was a discussion between my client, the owner of the home, and Deputy Stanley. I think it's reasonable to believe, even for a police officer, in a situation like that, if there's somebody in that house that has a large quantity of cannabis, not so sure the person's going to open the door up and have a discussion with the police officer, as in the Kentucky.
You're putting an awful lot of mental pressure on this person. You show up at a door, the person you're interested in with the registration violation is obstreperous, and you smell the marijuana. You don't really know what's going on in that house. But as a matter of prudence, I would think the officer would want to find out what was going on with the marijuana. And also, how much law are these police officers supposed to know? This seems a very fuzzy area. So how are they supposed to make a judgment that... No, there's no reasonable basis for thinking that you can enter a person's home in these circumstances?
You know, Your Honor, if it wasn't the facts of this particular case, I would agree with what you've said. But in this particular case, when the door was knocked on, the officer Stanley asked Mr. White, "Is Nancy home?" He said yes, and she said she wanted to come in and talk to him. And he said, "You can't come in without a warrant." She said, "I don't need a warrant." So she said, at that point, she believed she didn't need a warrant to come into that house in the first instance. I don't know that the smelling of marijuana
she
made that
wrong.
Much difference to her.
She was wrong. Yeah. But nevertheless, that's a separate issue
True.
From whether exigent circumstances existed to allow a search without a warrant. Yeah.
That's true. It's our position that there were exigent circumstances and in this particular case, and that the defendant should not be afforded qualified.
Is it actually clear? Is the law clear?
I don't think the law is. I think the district court found that the law was not clear, and I don't believe that
it is. It's not clear.
No, you ruled in your favor, though.
But if it's not clear, that's the case in which the officer gets qualified immunity.
Well, but the law is clear that you can't enter a home without a warrant, without exigent circumstances.
That's a separate issue. What she said, that's separate. The point is, she was drawn. I mean, maybe she had two reasons. She had two reasons to go after the woman. But if she has a reason that is not clearly excluded by law, then she's entitled to her qualified immunity. Otherwise, you know, you're just going to put unrealistic burdens on police officers of resolving unresolved legal questions. They can't do that. They're not capable of that.
Well, it's kind of an interesting problem, though, because you've got the general presumption that an entry into a home without a warrant is unconstitutional, and you would ordinarily expect a police officer who's going in without a warrant to at least have some idea why he or she is doing so and whether that's justified.
Correct.
And we know that the certification, the registration theft would not have authorized that. I don't see much evidence in the case law that just a smell of burning marijuana is enough to support an entry.
I don't know if there is any case law that supports just the smell of marijuana. All the
always
cases
with other, always with other elements.
Else, the running of people in the house, the flushing of a toilet, something of that nature, not just the smell of marijuana. And that's the basis for our argument. If there's any further questions.
That's pretty funny if you can immunize yourself from the search by not trying to destroy the evidence. That would be funny. No pitter-patter of little feet, no flushing of toilets. Then she has to go and get the warrant, and then they go to town. Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Perron. So, Mr. Carm, do you have anything further?
Your Honor, just briefly on that point, actually. The reasonableness is being the key to the Fourth Amendment question. And as Your Honor kind of indicated, if the police knock at the door and a person is holding a marijuana cigarette, they could open the door, the police see them holding what appears to be a marijuana cigarette, and they're not able to do anything. They have to look at them holding the cigarette. And that doesn't seem reasonable. That doesn't seem like what the courts would consider as reasonable for police officers to do. Because obviously they, once, as you stated, once they leave to get the warrant, the evidence is going to be gone. We'd ask that the court reverse the district court's denial of the motion for summary judgment and remand it for further trial on the remaining counts. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Carpenter and Mr. Perron. And our last case for argument is Banks v.